springs eternal. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. President Biden said that, returning to the White House this morning for a meeting on the Israeli hostage crisis, saying he believes they're very close to a deal to get Hamas to free hostages.
Mr. President, do you think it's time for Prime Minister Netanyahu to do more on this issue? Do you think he's doing enough?
No.
The president was also asked about the American among the six hostages found dead Saturday, murdered by Hamas, Hirsch Goldberg, Poland.
I spoke to his mom and dad. And we're not giving up. We're going to continue to push as hard as we can.
The president spoke a little over an hour ago as the funeral was underway in Jerusalem for Hirsch Goldberg, Poland.
And we're just getting some of the initial words in that his mother made when she addressed the crowd eulogizing her son. And she says, "Okay, sweet boy, go now on your journey. I hope it's as good as the trips you dreamed about."
Fox's Trey Yingst in Tel Aviv.
This has increased the pressure on the Israeli government to reach an agreement to bring the remaining more than 100 hostages home from Gaza. And that's part of why we saw demonstrations erupt here in Israel overnight. Protesters taking to the streets of Tel Aviv, blocking the main highway that runs through Israel's second largest city.
Now, after the White House Israel crisis meeting, President Biden will fly to Pittsburgh to campaign with and for Vice President Harris.
There is a huge Labor Day parade here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And while President Biden and the vice president won't be there, they will join people at this IBEW local hall of electrical workers later this afternoon. This is going to be their first appearance together since she accepted the nomination at the DNC back in Chicago last month.
Now, there will be a solo Harris campaign event before that in Detroit in a few hours amid labor unrest in eight other cities from Honolulu to San Francisco to Boston, where 10,000 housekeepers are out picketing a few dozen hotels, upset about working conditions, demanding better pay. America's listening to Fox News.
The best things in life, they come in twos. Two scoops of ice cream, two tacos. And now for a limited time, get our best deal of the year. Buy any phone when you switch to Consumer Cellular and get 2 months of service free. That's right, the same fast, reliable nationwide coverage as Big Wireless, now with 2 months free. Proof the best things in life really do come in twos. Visit ConsumerCellular.com or call 1-888-FREEDOM. Second and third month of monthly base service fee waived for new customers with the purchase of a phone and activation by September 2nd, 2024. Taxes, fees, and third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
I opened a gold IRA with Noble Gold Investments. There's no better vote for your financial safety than precious metals. So Noble Gold Investments is giving away up to 10 1-ounce silver Trump coins or a 10-ounce silver American flag bar with a qualifying account this month. Just use promo code Trump. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
From the News 11's information desk, I'm Karina Asarte. A special event was held in Yuma Saturday in honor of International Overdose Awareness Day. The community gathered to remember their loved ones who have passed away, but also to educate themselves. To read this story, head on over to our website. The Yuma Police Department arrested a woman for allegedly molesting a child. Crane Elementary School District sent out a press release saying the suspect was an employee at Pueblo Elementary School. The district also says the suspect will not be returning to work at any Crane Elementary District School. Detectives were able to confirm the suspect had sent a 14-year-old male inappropriate images and videos of herself. The victim also reported a sex act that occurred between him and the suspect. Catch us on News 11 tonight, 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
When you turn to the Employment Development Department, we'll help you get there. Whether it's support for you and your family while you find a new job, or the resources to focus on your recovery after illness or injury, we can help you move forward. From support while you bond with your newborn, to helping serve your family while your partner serves our country. Your EDD. We'll help you get there. For more information, visit edd.ca.gov.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. We're trying something out a little bit different today. We're in my office, and we have, you can see now, if you are watching this instead of listening to it, in studio is Cody Beason, Thomas Barks, and Adam Hanson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Right. So we were thinking about postponing this episode and recording it tomorrow, but I disclosed an epiphany that has made my life, my quality of life, better by leaps and bounds. And that is by finding a way to get around one of the government regulations of buckling your seatbelt. So I have two vehicles that are older vehicles that I've been driving around over the weekend that don't have a buzzer that go off when you buckle. So guess what? I don't buckle. And I've driven around town just like a vigilante, and it's been amazing not having to buckle and unbuckle every time I get in another car. Am I taking my life in my own hands? Yes. Do I feel free and more American? Yes, I do. So in my vehicle, my everyday driver, it's got a bunch of bells and whistles that go off. I'm too close to an object. Something's going to beep. It actually warned me today that I have 7,000 miles until my next oil change. Like, really? You need to warn me 7,000 miles in advance to my next oil change? So, that's it. I'm buckling this thing. And I buckled it, and now I sit on top of the seat buckle. It's a little uncomfortable, but it beats buckling every day and hearing that buzz when I'm not buckling. And so I want to hear, what are your pet peeves of these little government regulations that you have to bend the knee to that you wish we could do without?
Well, first of all, I think that's incredibly unsafe of you.
I'm breaking the law.
You are breaking the law.
You're a pilot.
My question is, I get it. You live like 5 blocks from here. Statistically?
Yeah. And I drove my
accidents happen in the first
5 miles.
5 blocks from your house.
I think it's 5 miles, but okay.
I made that up. And it is something close to your house.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, do you live by this principle when venturing further?
No.
Okay.
So if I'm going to go to Phoenix and I'm going to get on the freeway and stuff like that, yeah, I'll buckle up. But you're right. Since it only takes me about 3 minutes to commute, and a minute and a half of that is me getting in and getting organized in my car and buckling the seatbelt, having one less thing to do is awesome.
Tom, you have a Tesla.
I do.
It does a lot of cool stuff, including drives you around. Mm-hmm. Don't have to do anything. What would happen if you didn't buckle in that? I'm just curious. Would it allow you to move around? Or?
So if you don't buckle, you cannot use the autonomous driving. And then, but if you want to manually drive and then not buckle, then it'll just beep at you really loud.
Okay, so yeah. It's the same that you're experiencing. It's just beeping.
Yeah.
Does it ever stop, the beeping?
No.
Okay.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah. I mean, I haven't ventured long enough. It's got more diligence.
It gets long. My wife's, sorry to cut you off. My wife, now that you say that, my wife's, what is it, Sequoia? The new Sequoia. She, it's Toyota. If you don't buckle, like it's like gradually worse and worse. Beep, 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 beep. It's like, hey, like yelling at you. Hey!
Yeah,
like, dude, somebody buckle before I drive us off the road.
Like Toyota.
And I'm going to drive us in the freaking oncoming traffic right now.
Is
that what you want, Toyota?
It could make things more dangerous. There's an argument.
It is. It's like, it's so loud after a while that it's like, I'm going bonkers here, and I'm an unsafe driver.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes I try to challenge it, but it beeps too long. I've never overcome. Maybe like after an hour, it stops, but I've never got
it. Do it. I want you to do it.
You remember on the Ford on it,
Like, Toyotas will stop after like 30 seconds. Like, it's yeah. intense.
And I can bear 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, it's a
long time.
My Jeep will never stop. It'll just keep beeping. So I like to do what Sean does, just clip it and sit on top or you know, not.
So you've done it too. I was just the first one that's brave enough to come out.
What I'd like to do is, and I haven't done this yet, but I'd go to the junkyard and get like a, you know, cut an old seatbelt, you know, clip and just use that permanently.
Well, you can just buy them.
Yeah, I guess you could, yeah.
I bought lap belts.
You guys, you gotta look at our audience. You can't look at each other. You gotta look at our audience.
Are you supposed to not?
I hate to break it to you, but we don't have an audience.
My mom.
We are looking at our audience.
We are looking at our audience. This is our audience.
We watch each other.
I love your optimism, though.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going for double digits this month. I think we can break 10.
So tell me again why, or articulate to me why seatbelt laws are unconstitutional.
Oh, okay. So that came up when we were in the hallway debating on whether or not we wanted to record right now. I think that anything that doesn't protect our freedom from others, right, from others infringing on our freedom, our life, or our property is unconstitutional. It has to meet one of those three pillars. And so me buckling myself, that doesn't protect anybody else's, or me infringing upon anybody else's freedom, life, or property. I'm just as likely to wreck into them and injure them, buckled or unbuckled. In fact, with the buzzer going off, probably, like you said, more likely. But now for kids, I think that the government does have an interest in preserving their lives, even if parents are negligent. So I think that there is a very good argument, and I would even go along with that argument, that kids, there is a legal requirement for them to be buckled, and if parents decide not to, then they can be ticketed, and so be it. That's fine. Just like smoking. I think parents, you know, they can smoke, and that's legal, but, you know, handing a cigarette to your kid and letting them smoke, I think that's child abuse, although the secondhand smoke, there's an argument that it's already happening. Either way, I think any law that we have, let's think of a law that we think maybe is ridiculous and find if it meets one of those three pillars. Sometimes it meets all three.
So the pillars to you are, if it doesn't jeopardize the safety or the health of another person.
Yes.
You should be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't
infringe upon their liberty, their ability to move about freely or to act as they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
Including freedom of speech, freedom of religion, all those things.
Liberty to move or live as they want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the third?
The third is their property. You can't infringe upon their property rights.
Okay. So I can't come live in your backyard.
You can't walk without your permission. Backyard without me pulling up a shotgun and literally threatening your life to get off my property.
Okay. So these are the pillars.
Yes.
The constitutional pillars of your personal test?
In the preamble. Well, it's actually in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
So does the seatbelt not keep you safer and keep you in a position to...
Yes.
I guess, continue operating the vehicle?
No.
You know, like if you were thrown out of that seat, you'd be...
If I'm thrown out of that seat, I think we're beyond safety at that point. I mean, my safety is being compromised, but I think that other drivers' safety and the passengers in my car, it's already a foregone conclusion. If I'm hitting something hard enough or swerving or rolling or whatever it is to be thrown out of my seat because I don't have my seatbelt, I don't think I'm going to be recovering control of the vehicle at that time.
Do you find yourself maybe consciously or subconsciously driving more safely when you're not buckled? Or
no.
Is it the same? You just jump in and let it roll?
No, I roll. Here's the thing. I literally got out of my car this morning, and I was like, that was a refreshing drive to work. It was that. And yes, my drive to work is 5 minutes. I live 1 mile away. And so half of my preparation to drive to work is buckling and unbuckling the seatbelt. So that eliminated a big portion of it. But it was just the ability to jump in my car and zip over. In fact, last night, I had to bring some keys over because there was some construction being done. And instead of jumping in my car, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go a little rogue. I jumped on the scooter, threw on some safety glasses,
oh, nice.
And zipped over and zipped back home. I was like, that felt a lot faster and easier. And it's more akin to not having to buckle when I get into my BMW, which is sheltering me with steel and plastic and shatterproof glass and airbags. And now this belt that's strapping me to the seat. Like, I was totally legal on that scooter with just safety glasses. But I was totally illegal in my BMW with every safety feature, not wearing my seatbelt.
Well, I think you're a bad person.
Okay.
Did you want to... about the safety glasses, Steve, you feel encumbered with the safety glasses?
The safety glasses, no. Those are... That's a real thing because, I mean, a bee or a rock or anything flying in your eye, yeah, that happens.
So you see the value in wearing those.
I absolutely see the value in wearing those. And, yeah.
What so your helmet, though?
So that's the
Arizona next, doesn't require a helmet.
So that's the next good thing.
Is there value in it, though?
Why don't we equate the helmet law with the seatbelt law? I think those are on par. We should look at the helmet law and say everything that's required with the helmet law apply to the seatbelt law. Because, for example, you must wear a helmet if you are under 18. If you're over 18, you don't have to wear a helmet.
Okay.
You do need to wear safety glasses, and I can like you get hit in the eye. And, yeah, you swerve in oncoming traffic, and you're going to cause a wreck. That is going to compromise the property of somebody else, the safety of somebody else, their life, and, of course, their liberty to move about freely. So it hits all three pillars. So that is a fantastic argument as to why don't we equate the safety belt law to the helmet law.
So does an individual not get constitutional rights in your mind until they turn 18?
An individual is protected by the Constitution and by our government and doesn't have the mentality to exercise their liberty. They need to be protected. And so I think that the government does have a vested interest in protecting minors that haven't developed a mentality to preserve their own life.
Yeah, I think that, I forgot the word is, but the case law, like curtailed is like the case law language. Minors have curtailed rights. They still do have rights.
So, I mean, if you really want to get into the heavy issues, we can jump right into abortion.
That's what I was leaning towards. So if you're going to say, well, you are an American citizen, you just don't get to enjoy all the constitutional benefits until you vest or invest in you, let's say, at 18.
But, yeah.
Then the argument is a slippery slope, and you're exactly right, Sean. The first thing that comes to my mind is abortion.
Mm-hmm. So whose rights are we protecting when we're advocating for the preservation of the life
of a child?
Are we focusing on the mother's life and curbing her reproductive health care rights is how I think it's termed now. Is it reproductive rights? I think that's how it's termed. It's no longer pro-choice. I want to be pro-choice to kill my baby or to let it survive in my womb and be born. I want to have reproductive freedom, meaning the freedom to not reproduce by killing the infant that I've already began to produce. And no, I don't think you have that freedom anymore. I think you have the freedom to be promiscuous. I think you have the freedom to have unprotected sex. But once you get pregnant, and once there is now a new life in being, the Constitution looks at that person as an American citizen and says, we need to protect that person. You might choose not to buckle that baby, and you're going to get a ticket for it. Or worse, you may choose not to feed that baby when, you know, he's an infant, and you'll get charged with neglect. You may choose to give them alcohol or a cigarette, and you're going to be charged with abuse. If you choose to dismember that baby's body while in your womb, I think that is also an infringement upon that baby's right to life. So there, it has a constitutional right, and one of those major pillars has been infringed upon.
Would a pregnant mother, be liable for not protecting their baby by getting into the car and not buckling. That baby has constitutional rights to life.
We already recognize that. If she were in a car driving to Circle K and somebody slammed into her and her baby died as a result of that, that would be called manslaughter. And I go to prison on a weekly basis, not because I'm on work release or anything, but
that's true. But you say it that way.
I do prison ministries, and so I go and I teach Sunday school classes. I teach the gospel to inmates on a weekly basis. And most of the people that are in there are there because of drugs and alcohol. And the people that have the longer sentences typically are in there because while they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, they were driving a vehicle and ran into somebody else, and the person in the other vehicle died, or somebody in their vehicle died. And so they were charged with manslaughter. And there we go. We got a 10-year sentence, and they're in prison. And a lot of these guys are really good guys, but yeah, they made some bad decisions, and they need to live with those decisions. And I think the same thing goes with the abortion issue. I think I love women in general, and I think women who get pregnant unintentionally are still probably very good people. However, they need to live with that decision and not take a life as a result of making that decision and attempting to make their life more convenient.
What would you say an alternative would be then?
Well, I think the alternative isn't that we throw them in prison, you know, for attempting to make have an abortion, or even their doctors in prison. But I think that what would be probably a good balance is allow anybody that had an interest in that child's life to sue whoever participated in taking that child's life. For example, if I am at a party and I serve up a bunch of alcohol to my guests and then hand them their keys as they're walking out the door, then I can be liable for anybody that they run into for a result of that drunk driving. Same thing, if the doctor and the nurse participate in aborting a baby and taking away its life, I think that the father, who may want to have his child's life preserved, could sue the doctor and could sue the nurse as well as the mother for participating in the wrongful death of that child.
We've got to go to a break. It's been a good discussion, but we'll come back to this right after the break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
If you have questions about how to get your affairs in order, we're talking if you don't have a power of attorney in place or a will in place or some sort of legal planning to plan for the event of when you become incapacitated or you pass away, then you need to come and see us. We've got an upcoming seminar coming on Friday, September 13th. Yes, it's Friday the 13th. Don't be scared. This is the place you want to be. It's at the Foothills Library at 2:30 in the afternoon. Come and see myself and Sean. We'll be there answering questions. There's not very many times that you have available to you to ask questions of an attorney without being billed. This is one of those times, so come and see us. We're going to be talking about how you can put your stuff in order to hopefully avoid government processes if you become incapacitated or when you pass away, to make sure that your assets are protected going to your family members and those that you care about. So come and see us. This is September 13th. It's a Friday. Don't be scared of that. Friday the 13th. Come and see Sean and I, and we'll answer some of your questions.
We are in for a very hot week of weather, 110 and sunny today, 85 and clear tonight, sunny and 111 tomorrow, 85 tomorrow night, Wednesday, sunny and 111.
Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros have been serving Arizona for over 20 years. It's heating up, so get your vehicles and watercrafts ready for summer. Make sure your AC, tires, brakes, and bearings are inspected. We also do alignments, oil changes, preventive maintenance, and more. Get your tires at any of our four Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros locations or use the Tire Finder online at edwhiteheadstirepros.com. We also have free pickup and drop-off for your hassle-free experience guaranteed. Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros. Yeah,
We got tires for that.
Once upon a time, air conditioning was simple. It blew cold air, or it didn't. Today, air conditioning is more than cooling. Healthy, conditioned air is essential. When people ask me who I trust, I tell them, in Yuma, the only thing you need to know about air conditioning is Hansberger Refrigeration. Find them at HansbergerRefrig.com. That's Hansberger, R-E-F-R-I-G.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We've been having a heated discussion. By heated, I mean I'm right and you're wrong.
Sean. By heated, I mean look at the camera instead of me.
And we've been talking, we went from seatbelts to abortion.
For purpose, I know it.
We went from seatbelts to abortion. And made that connection constitutionally. Yeah, a question came up, Cody, that you had.
Yeah, so at what point does the state step in and say, hey, this life should have been protected? You know, if that mother recklessly, you know, did not clip her seatbelt and got in an accident.
I think we have already, just like the seatbelt and the helmet laws, a very good parallel to say, hey, this goes from protecting your life, and we're intruding now on your right to decide whether or not it's necessary to buckle with the helmet, and saying you can choose whether or not you want to have your head split open like a cantaloupe on the freeway when you're driving a motorcycle. I think that parallel is made, that once you become an adult at 18 years old, you can make that decision for yourself. And I think there are equal parallels with pregnant mothers when they are endangering their babies by smoking or drinking alcohol or taking drugs. There are penalties, both civil and criminal, for exposing an unborn fetus to those types of harmful elements. And so let's look back at what those timelines are. That is the ultimate question. When is a cluster of cells a human that has constitutional rights? I don't know. I would say it feels right to me that when the heart beats, then it's pretty obvious. That happens about 6 weeks. And so in a lot of very conservative states, they have the heartbeat law that after the heart beats, then abortion is no longer on the table. I think that is a very reasonable option. Does that answer your question, Cody? Or do you think that that's too strict?
No, I mean, I think that at least put some parameters out there. But again, you know, at one point do we go from personal freedom of, you know, strapping yourself into a seatbelt to the state representing?
Because you're a libertarian for the most part.
A conservative libertarian, yeah. I think government should get out of our lives. I think it's very much like you, like how this conversation started. Mm-hmm. I don't like clipping in my seatbelt for going a mile. I'm just going up. It's annoying.
Yeah,
you know?
Well,
get government out of your life.
Whether it's a mile or whether it's 500 miles, you know, it's ultimately my choice. And whether I'm, you know, smoking cigarettes pack after pack at home or working out and drinking protein drinks, that's also my choice. And I don't think the government ought to intervene as to what I eat and, you know, how often I work out. I also don't think it should intervene as to whether or not I strap into my vehicle as long as I'm not harming somebody else. Thomas, what's your take on all this?
I think that the major pillar that I see the difference is the ability to have risk towards yourself versus the ability to risk other people's health and safety. So in every scenario we've gone over, I think the one that we're saying you should be able to do this, it's only when you impose a risk upon yourself. As soon as you start risking somebody else, now the government has ground to come in and say this isn't right. I don't think it should be viewed as the government's interest, though. The government's interest is only interested in preserving rights. Like, I think when you say the government has an interest in this, it starts looking like
they give in. They're the ones that proclaim upon us and really these rights.
The only interest the government has is in kids surviving is to perpetuate taxpayers. That's really, really, I think, their interest.
No, and I just... Well, okay. That's a fine theory that you have. Mm-hmm. I disagree with it. I think that we, the people, have formed a government of the people and for the people to protect the people from others infringing upon our rights. So we have selected among ourselves a group of individuals and delegated the power that we have to them to put forces in place, the police force, whether it be the FBI, CIA, whatever it is, to go in and make sure that we are free from the intrusion upon our God-given rights. And when the government has an interest, all I'm referring to is that we have delegated the right to the government to protect those rights. Therefore, we, the people, have an interest in protecting others that make up the population, and that's American citizens, including unborn children.
That is a constitutional view, but I agree with Thomas in the sense of from what's been borne out through Supreme Court decisions. That is the main impetus of the Supreme Court's abortion argument, is that it's tied to a taxpayer, that the government has an interest in this particular child being born because eventually he or she will become a taxpayer.
That is the shallowest, stupidest argument I've ever heard.
I agree. But that is the government's argument. And it is the henchpin of their argument when it comes to abortion rights. And that's what the Supreme Court has said.
It may seem like semantics, like what I'm trying to argue, but I think what Adam's saying, and I agree with, is it can bear out some bad things. But the semantics are people have interests. The government doesn't have an interest. People have interests. So
correct.
The baby has an interest in being buckled because it can't buckle itself. So it's the baby's interest that the government is coming in to protect.
Yes. Now, when I say the government, mm-hmm. I mean, in its purest form, the delegation of the people's authority to a body that we have incorporated to protect our rights, because we don't want to go around having to defend
police.
Our homes and police, you know, our businesses.
People that aren't wearing their seatbelts.
Children.
Including women, pregnant women.
Yeah, so that is the government. But we are the government. So when I say the government has an interest, we are the government.
Right, so you're using it in a much different way than has been traditionally used in the last, 50 years of jurisprudence, which is my point.
I'm using it in the way that it was used when the Constitution was written, we the people.
Right, yeah. I agree with that, but I want the listener to know, when we say the government's interest, what we mean is the people's interest the government is responsible for protecting. It doesn't have its own standalone interests, which I think a lot of case law seems to hint.
So I'm on board with you, Sean. I wholeheartedly agree. The problem is there's a disconnect between what actually the Constitution does or protects and jurisprudence in these particular areas, because of what are the two strongest arguments for a government body, specifically the legislature, to win the argument of the Supreme Court as to why they put in force a law. What are those two biggest arguments that win almost 99% of the time? One is the taxing power, which is enumerated for the legislature.
Yeah.
And the second is the Commerce Clause.
Yeah.
If you can tuck it into one of those two,
so
you win.
Explain the Commerce Clause to our audience.
Well, the Commerce Clause means that the legislature can enact laws when the actor is, that can curb the actor or can regulate commerce between state to state.
Yeah.
Business.
So if there's any type of transactions that are going over state lines, then Congress now has plenary authority, meaning very wide authority, to enact a law regarding that. And almost everything that we do, because we're such a widespread society over state to state, everything we do has to do with commerce interstate. And so then every law, you can link it to that. And that's been the slippery slope with that decision that says interstate commerce has to do with everything. That now allows Congress to enact almost any law that they want.
If you were to go back and read the Obamacare decision, I think this was 2011, maybe, something like that, 2011, 2012. So Obama implemented Obamacare, kind of rammed it through legislation after meetings in the middle of the night. It wasn't something that really was done legislatively, I would
right.
say. It was just kind of rammed through.
The famous quote from Nancy Pelosi was, you got to pass the law to understand what's in the law.
Yeah, and so they did that. obviously, the Republican side took issue with that, especially those states that were run by Republicans. So you have Republican governors start suing the federal government for jamming this down the American people's throats, and they're saying this is unconstitutional. You can't make us buy into this healthcare system.
All along the way, saying this is not a tax. I'm not implementing a new tax. Okay.
So you read that decision, and it's bifurcated into two arguments by the federal government. This is constitutional because, number one, it's commerce. It goes from state to state. Healthcare is a state-to-state issue. Number two, it's not a mandate. It's a tax. And ultimately, because it's a tax and legislature has plenary authority or power over taxing the American people, the Supreme Court said, yeah, this is a tax. It's not a mandate. It's a tax. And you guys can do that. You can be taxed. Because the Constitution actually enumerates that.
So I hope all of you caught that. As the president is out there preaching and getting support for this Obamacare, saying, I'm not going to tax you. You can keep your own insurance if you want to. There's not going to be any increase in taxes. On the back end in the court, he's saying, this is a tax, and Congress has plenary authority over taxes, so this is constitutional. So he was telling the people one thing and arguing legally behind the curtains another thing.
So I just bring that up because I agree wholeheartedly with what the philosophy is, Sean, constitutional rights and what the government really should be doing. The reality is what it's done in the past and what's been held as constitutional through the court systems is basically the opposite. Well, it always hinges on taxpayers.
Yeah, and we've had this argument in the past that there's this big threshold that Supreme Court seems to need to overcome in order to decide every case, and that is stare decisis, and that means let the decision stand. If there's been any prior court cases on that type of issue, the decision of the prior court should have a lot of weight in determining the outcome of the current decision. And we both agree that stare decisis is no longer a good precedent because we've had some very terrible decisions, and we shouldn't give a ton of weight to a terrible decision. We should go right back to the founding document, to the Constitution, and say, is it in here in the Constitution, and use that as our founding or our starting point and go up. And now we can give a little bit of credence to other decisions that were made and the arguments that were made in those decisions, because I think a smart group of people got together and made arguments, and so use those arguments. But don't just use the decision on it and say, well, this is what they decided. I don't care how they worked and twisted and turned upside down the document to get to it. This is what they decided. Therefore, we're going to put this way up here on the decision-making factor. No, let's look at the arguments. Maybe you can quote some of the arguments. And, you know, Senator O'Connor was, of course, involved in the Roe v. Wade argument. And I've read her argument probably 10 times, and I still don't understand it. So let's place the actual precedent on the argument, which is crap, instead of the ultimate decision.
And the current court, or the current makeup of the court, is such that they've already expressed their willingness to overturn bad decisions in the past. And I think what they mean by that is, and the left really gets upended by this because they're saying, oh, you know, you're overthrowing 50 years of jurisprudence and what the law is. It's like, well, the law was never good to begin with, and it was just these 9 unelected people that decided that. It wasn't the people. And you could make that argument for all things that go before the Supreme Court. However, the current makeup of the court is more interested with what you're talking about, in my opinion, to the Constitution. They don't care about necessarily what's come before. Rather, are we infringing on an individual's rights, their constitutional rights as given by God, not by the government, but protected by the government? That's really what that comes down to.
The people that say that the courts should respect Roe v. Wade just because it's been around a long time are the people that say we need to put more justices in the court and get away from the precedent of only having 9 justices. And it's like, come on, you're speaking out of both sides of your mouth here. If you start packing the court, you're really going to undo the separation of powers, because now it's the president that is controlling the court by determining how many people are in the court. Ultimately, Congress has to decide how many people are on the Supreme Court, and then the president appoints those Supreme Court justices, but those two powers should be 100% separate from the Supreme Court. You're saying, let's take away the whole separation of powers because you don't like the decision of this justice that's overturning a bad decision that was made 50 years ago.
Recently, we had the Trump case of immunity come before the court, and what they did, so I think you do have to have some sort of guidelines, and it helps when an issue has come before the court and you can look back on that as some guidelines, and that's really what stare decisis is. We're going to look at what have we said before on this particular issue or an issue that's really close to this issue, and let's go through the analysis. I liked how in this last opinion for the Trump case, the immunity case, they broke it up into three different distinguishable acts of a president. You had acts that are definitely 100% acts of the president or the executive.
Yeah.
Other acts that...
Official acts.
Official acts of the president. Other acts that we're going to give it the benefit of the doubt that this is probably an official act. You have that as a starting point, but it is rebuttable.
Because it fits within the type of activity that an official would perform.
In the past that we've seen. And then third is private acts are not immune from criminal liability or tort law.
Trump's walking down the street, punches somebody in the face, or shoots them.
Yeah, exactly. So,
because that's the argument that, you know, many liberals come up with. Well, oh, he's got presidential immunity, so if he's president, he can walk down the street, shoot somebody. They're like, no. Are you listening to anything we're saying? That is not an official act. That is a private individual now acting privately.
I think it does a good job of allowing us to compartmentalize acts of the president. I think of Biden and Harris pulling out our troops from Afghanistan, and I think, what, 15 servicemen were killed in that? And we lost billions of dollars of equipment,
yeah,
and machinery.
Over $80 billion, and we just saw that the Taliban was parading through Afghanistan using our equipment and demonstrating their authority and control over the country to the rest of the world using $80 billion of U.S. military equipment.
So at what point is a president and a vice president culpable for something like that? Or are they? And so that's what this case really defined. I think that is an exclusive right of the president and vice president to deal in. He's the commander-in-chief that has stated in the Constitution. So he has exclusive rights to send our armies here, there, wherever, not send them, pull them out. He has exclusive right to do that. So I would imagine that fits within the number one category, which is those are official acts. He's the only one that has the power to do that.
Yes.
Or the vice president.
Does Biden have any type of personal liability for leaving all of that military equipment over there, empowering the Taliban to terrorize that region of the world? What say you, Thomas?
No. Just from a principle standpoint, like if you want to follow the decision, I think that falls into his official role as president. So even though as much as I'd like to see someone held responsible for that, I don't think it can be the president.
But how do we hold him responsible? Cody, you want to chime in on that?
Well, so I agree with Thomas. Official acts, yeah, he's safe, but leaving top secret documents around a Corvette, around Hunter, I don't think that's an official action. I think he would be, you know, held liable for that, right? Because that's...
Well, even if, I don't know. I would say that fits within an official act, but it's
private possession.
Well, but it's still bad, right? Yeah. Like he got a hold of those documents in this official capacity, but he
right.
was negligent in his official capacity, and so I think that he could be impeached for that. And so that's how I think we hold them responsible, as we either vote them out of office,
yeah,
or we go through what is already given to us as the constitutional safeguards to get somebody that is negligent or in the Constitution committing high crimes and misdemeanors and remove them from office.
I think Trump's attorneys argued those things. You're saying, I think the president as the executive has to enjoy a certain amount of immunity, because we don't want the president to have to second guess in a situation where it's life or death, let's say, as to what he's going to do, based on, I don't want to be liable for this. And so the argument is that our president enjoys a lot of immunity, if not absolute immunity, for certain things like official acts, because they have to be able to act and not be worried about liability down the road.
Right. And they can't see all things and the potential of every outcome. For example, people think that Harry Truman should be held liable for the hundreds of thousands of people that died during the atom bomb explosions on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. No, that's an official act. He had to decide to do that. He had a balance of alternatives, and he made his decision in his official capacity as a president. There's no way a citizen has that type of authority. And so whether it's right or wrong, he is not personally liable. Now, whether or not we vote him out of office or impeach him later on for saying, well, that was the wrong decision, I personally don't believe it was, but others that do believe that, they still have those functions in which they could get rid of him as an official actor.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head. That was the other argument by the Trump attorney team, is that we already have a mechanism in place to deal with that particular issue, because the Biden administration was arguing for, which is really ironic, because the things they were arguing for would put Biden in a very precarious position.
Right. Like as he soon, would be as soon set as they to prison, lose power, then
he's going to jail.
Right, exactly. I don't understand how they're so short-sighted in all of the powers that they're granting to the president, and especially with this political warfare that is going on between him and the opposing party, with the Republicans and Trump in particular, and RFK also, and the censorship of the media, and all of these additional authorities that they're allowing the government to do, which in their party, as liberals, as Democrats, have actually held sacred, which is the ability of the press to express whatever opinion they see fit and have it not censored. And now they want censorship. They don't see how that's going to come back and bite them when another party becomes in power. They're just setting up the groundwork for a fascist state.
Absolutely. We got to take a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit yumaestateplanning.com.
This house seems very hot. Ugh, the AC is blowing hot air.
Call Air Solutions of Yuma for residential and commercial HVAC services. They'll repair, do maintenance and installations with their experienced and professional technicians. Air Solutions of Yuma can help your air temperature and quality to make all the difference in this heat. Local authorized Bryant dealer. Contact them today. Air Solutions of Yuma. Find them on Facebook or call for an appointment. 928-627-1343. Air Solutions of Yuma will cool you down.
Your phone's blowing up, but you're in the driver's seat. Ignore the buzz, keep your eyes on the street. No text back, no scroll, just let it wait. Attention on the road, that's the only way. Phone's blowing up, but you're in the driver's seat. Ignore the buzz, keep your eyes on the street. No text back, no scroll, just let it wait.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We have been talking about some deep subjects and their constitutionality, And I could see Tom was just chomping at the bit to add his wonderful quick wit to the conversation as to what he believes is right and wrong when it comes to presidential immunity. What do you think, Tom?
And my two cents, I think the founders were very wise men, and I think we err when we say that we could do it better. They were highly educated, and I think that we shouldn't go so far as to say we can't improve upon something that they put, but it better be darn good if we're going to change what they wrote down, because they were brilliant and what I believe inspired men.
And they told us how to do that.
Yeah, they did, and that was through the amendment process. But it's very difficult to amend the Constitution by design, because we don't want willy-nilly changes when we have a quick transfer of power for 4 to 8 years. Because I think the founders wisely decided that there would be a vast pendulum swing between administrations, and if we make it so easy to change, then there's going to be no stability for the country. And so I'm thankful for their wisdom in setting it up like that, because I agree with what Sean was saying, that we're so short-sighted, both parties, all people. I think that's a human characteristic, is we have a hard time seeing the big picture all the time. You've got the Democrats who had the Supreme Court majority for, many years, for decades, with the Rehnquist Court and moving on through the years until very recently, the conservatives have gotten the majority. And, the whole time the Democrats have that majority, they're all about the Supreme Court. Like, oh, the Supreme Court's great, they're doing their job. And then all of a sudden, some of these decisions get overturned. And now what do you hear? It's like, oh, now it's time to pack the court. This is terrible. This is not how the founders envisioned it. Like, this is exactly how they envisioned it. Is that protection from, I guess, just changes at the drop of a hat, it would seem.
And what is it that people are so upset about the Supreme Court? What rights are being infringed upon or taken away from us? It's being cried out there that the Supreme Court is not respecting our rights. So let's look into it a little bit. The Supreme Court reversed Roe versus Wade and with the Dobson case, and they said, we don't have the authority to determine whether or not a woman has a right to have an abortion. We don't have that authority. The states have authorities to make laws regarding their citizens to protect the citizens' rights within them. And if those states' rights are so arbitrary or capricious that they are going to infringe upon the general constitutional rights that are given to all citizens of the United States, then we'll jump in and we'll say, no, that's unconstitutional. For example, if a state were to pass a law that if a woman were to maybe conceive, right, the morning after consensual sex or whatever, non-consensual sex even, and conceive, and now they say, another state says, you can't take the morning after pill. The Supreme Court may say, well, we don't know that the cluster of cells in her womb actually has met the threshold of meriting the protections of American citizen. We're going to look more to the actual rights of the woman and her ability to control her body at that point. And so, yes, she does have the right to take the morning after pill and to terminate that pregnancy. I think the Supreme Court could step in there and say, states, you've overstepped your bounds with her constitutional rights. The Supreme Court has only done that, though, saying the states have all the authority to make the laws. We'll just determine when the states have gone too far. And with that decision, there's this public outcry that now we no longer have rights because the Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade.
It'd be interesting. The thought comes to mind. You see on TV from time to time, like TV hosts going out to the street and asking people. It'd be really interesting to see what responses you would get when you asked, what did Roe v. Wade, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, do?
Yes.
What do you understand that to do now?
And there was an interview with Kamala, I want to make sure that I pronounce her name right, because if I don't pronounce her name right, I'm being racist. Kamala Harris had an interview about that, particularly, and said, what is it in Roe v. Wade that they got wrong in overturning it? Did you ever see that interview?
No, I haven't seen it.
And her, and they did, and they interviewed Joe Biden too. And the answer every time was, "I support Roe v. Wade." And he's like, "That great, understood. What is it in Roe v. Wade that the court will return that you don't like?" Because that opinion is very complicated and very convoluted in how they came about their reasoning to determine that a person does have a constitutional right to have an abortion, even though nothing is mentioned in the Constitution about reproductive rights or abortion at all, to read that into the Constitution. They say, well, where, what do you see in that decision that the court got wrong? And they will never actually delineate it, because the decision was terrible and it isn't a constitutional right. It simply is not in the Constitution. Now, if you want it to be in a Constitution, Thomas pointed that out, make an amendment that women have the right to abort their children and terminate their lives up until the time they're born. And if that amendment passes, then our society is in a downward spiral anyway, and we're going to hell in a handbasket. But nonetheless, it will be a constitutional right. Up to that point, it's not.
Cody, I want to know from you, we've got an election coming up, and we talked about the natural built-in way to deal with, for example, a president maybe acting in a way that we didn't agree with. Let's use Biden as an example. He pulled the troops out of Afghanistan without any support, or from all reports, really haphazardly, and as a consequence, our military was compromised. Many service members died.
Hundreds of American citizens were left behind.
Yeah. And we lost billions of dollars worth of taxpayer-funded equipment and military might. So what do you think that's coming into this next election? Is that even an issue to you when going to the ballot box? Do you think that's a big issue to other people? Or is it not popular enough to make TikTok and Instagram?
You know, it kind of ties all this together, because it feels like even with the abortion case, it was just a big gaslighting process. Because what was the abortion case about? States' rights. But that's never what you heard. You heard the Supreme Court hates women. Right. You know, like, that was what caught headlines. Same thing with your question here. I don't think they're going to look at the track record of the previous administration. They're going to gaslight us and say, look how amazing everything is, and vote blue or whatever they're going to do. But at the end of the day, I think it's really, we're not having a fair conversation.
Okay. We got to go.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
If you have questions about how to get your affairs in order, we're talking if you don't have a power of attorney in place or a will in place or some sort of legal planning to plan for the event of when you become incapacitated or you pass away, then you need to come and see us. We've got an upcoming seminar coming on Friday, September 13th. Yes, it's Friday the 13th. Don't be scared. This is the place you want to be. It's at the Foothills Library at 2:30 in the afternoon. Come and see myself and Sean. We'll be there answering questions. There's not very many times that you have available to you to ask questions of an attorney without being billed. This is one of those times. So come and see us. We're going to be talking about how you can put your stuff in order to hopefully avoid government processes if you become incapacitated or when you pass away, to make sure that your assets are protected going to your family members and those that you care about. So come and see us. This is September 13th. It's a Friday. Don't be scared of that. Friday the 13th. Come and see Sean and I, and we'll answer some of your questions.
Moving Day. A walk for Parkinson's is more than just a walk. Moving Day is a fun experience that unites the community in the fight against Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's doesn't stop, and neither will we. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register for an event in your area at movingdaywalk.org. That's movingdaywalk.org.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.